You found the Diggin' Oak Island podcast, the podcaster's journey to discover the truth behind the Oak Island mystery. I'm Dave McBride. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. If you've been listening to and enjoying our podcast, please consider helping the show out by becoming a patron. Go to patreon.com/diggin' oak island to learn more. All right, let me say right off the bat, next week is the season finale, folks, of The Curse of Oak Island. So that means we're going to start needing your thoughts, your reflections on the season, so we can do a episode or two devoted just to what you guys, the listeners, thought of season 11 of The Curse of Oak Island. So you're going to get those in along with your normal emails and stuff. Just start thinking about it, you know. I'll read any emails I get this week, I'll read on the next podcast, but after that, we're going to do sort of a season wrap-up. I'll have my thoughts, and you guys can do yours, and we'll do a show about that before I kind of take a break on the podcast a little bit to get me through for the next couple of weeks, and then come back sometime after Memorial Day. I got some plans for some really nice interviews and stuff, so stay tuned for all of that, but just send your emails in, digginoakisland@gmail.com, I'm sorry. And also, remember, if you think this podcast is worth $5 a month to you, and you'd like to see it keep going strong, then you can. Then please consider becoming a patron. Go to patreon.com/diggin' oak island to sign up. As a patron, you get exclusive access to the live chat during the U.S. broadcast of each new episode of The Curse of Oak Island. I love that chat. And guys, if you are on the chat, it is now available on Patreon's desktop version as well. It was for a long time just on the app, but now you can get it on the desktop as well. If that helps any, you can sign in there. Again, folks, go to patreon.com/diggin' oak island. Support the podcast. $5 a month. You can cancel anytime. And if you prefer not to do the monthly thing, but you want to help out the show, you certainly can make a donation to the show via Venmo. Just use the username @DaveMcBrideMusic. That's my musician page there. And that's where you can do that. It's the only place I have set up. So, as always, excuse me, let's start today's podcast with emails and messages from you, the listeners. And we begin with some positivity, right? Some good stuff. And an email from our old friend Warren, who writes, "Best episode ever." He's referring to last week. He continues, "Isn't there a way to identify methods of concrete manufacturing, especially from the components identified by Emma? Maybe the listeners know this. And if that hair ends up being Fred Nolan's, we are in big trouble. Seriously, though, that was a great all-around episode. Love the Euro trip and Laird once again, rock star Warren." Warren is talking again about last week's episode, not the one we just watched. And I think he's right. I don't know if I would say the best ever, but it was a good one for sure. I think I won a couple episodes before I liked even more. And if this ends up being Fred Nolan's hair, I have a few researcher friends I know that who would be pretty happy about that one, as it would certainly verify some of their theories about the origins of Nolan's Cross. Great stuff, Warren. Thank you very much. Let's go now to an email from Andy, not quite as positive as Warren's. He titles it, "You Bend 'Em, We Mend 'Em." Andy writes, "My subject line is in reference to the catchphrase on the side of the Corkum towing truck, which, as I was reading their middling reviews online, they promptly dropped a multi-ton stone on the TV, almost causing the final death that Oak Island needs." Off to a bit of a snarky start there, Andy. Anyway, Andy continues, "Doesn't it seem the production wants us to believe that the Oak Island guys are discovering a link between the Templars and the Vikings that no one has researched before? It seems this would have been covered before by someone in the last 1,000 years. As for the trips to Europe, I almost enjoy seeing the similar carvings in both places, but in reality, I don't enjoy seeing these markings as much as Rick enjoys his yearly free trips to Europe. Side note, as the episodes fill up with more and more recreated video clips of Templars stomping around, it crossed my mind that this footage has to come from somewhere and not recreated by the production itself. There is no way they have a budget for that. Someday, one of us is going to be watching a mid-90s Templar movie or TV show and recognize where these clips came from." Andy, I'm going to stop here again. The History Channel has made over the years so many Knights Templar related shows, Prometheus must just have hours and hours worth of B-roll footage to choose from. So actually what you're seeing now is the old stuff. I don't think, I've actually recognized some of these similar clips on some of the older History Channel Templar documentaries. So they're definitely not creating this themselves, or maybe some of it, but certainly not all of it. And they've been reusing some of it for years and years. I wouldn't worry about their budget too much. I think they're going to be fine. Andy continues, finally, Emma the Oracle then pops up, and I call her this because I notice she has all the answers but never gives them until requested from the guys, and not a second sooner. I wonder what she knows and is not telling us. The hair and the concretion is really interesting. I immediately thought maybe the concretion was a purposely compacted pad of dirt to balance or set the stone onto, and oxen pulled the stone into place, leaving strands of their hair beneath the stone. It is amazing to me that they pretty much proved that those stones were purposely placed there, and it ensures us of many more episodes of the tow truck lifting these stones to see what lies beneath. Finally, the show started in a way that made me think I missed an episode. All of a sudden, we are drilling a Bravo hole in the rock garden, but I'm not really sure why it's so far away from the unfortunately named Baby Blob. I guess I'll have to ask Emma. Sincerely, Audio Andy. I was a little confused by the placement of the borehole that you're referring to at the end there myself, but not by the fact that they were doing this drilling. I mean, they mentioned that last week, that this is what they were going to do, return to a borehole, exploratory borehole thing over the next couple of weeks. But why this particular borehole was so far north in the money pit, you know, I don't know, but I guess that's just part of the process that they've come up with to try and find or follow the source of precious metal in the water around here. Great stuff, Andy. Always good to hear from you. Got a nice way of putting things. Let's head far, far away from Oak Island, about as far as you can get, and hear from Tom, who writes, "Hi, Dave. I'm writing this from Canberra, Australia. I really enjoy listening to your podcast each week while walking the dog. It provides great insight into what is really going on. I like your balance of belief and skepticism, especially around items which they never get back to. My biggest gripe is the chapel vault. Surely they would put a can down on that one. My query from the last episode, which I'm sure others have thought about, before they lifted the large stone, why didn't they clean the area around the stone of leaves so they had a clear area to work from? It looked like debris could have been dropped in from anywhere. Also, why didn't they pump out the bottom of the water and sift the mud? This whole process looked extremely amateur and not what I was expecting. I hope to make it up your way one day. I have only ever visited the West Coast. Keep up the great work and keep well. Cheers, Tom." Tom, first of all, thanks for writing. Thanks for listening all the way from Australia. By the way, my way is not that close to Oak Island. I'm not even in Canada. I live about 30 minutes west of Manhattan in New Jersey. And I, too, have never been to Oak Island. I'm still waiting for that invite, but I've been waiting for a few years now, so maybe I can stop waiting and hoping. Anyway, regarding that Cone E work you mentioned from last week, I think you're right. A lot about it was strange for me. If you really thought that what you had here was a giant Christian cross made out of humongous boulders placed by the Knights Templar using sacred astronomy sometime in the 13th century at an incredible, almost Herculean effort, mind you, to complete, is this really the way you would examine those boulders? With a tow truck and an excavator? You wouldn't do a proper archaeological excavation to make sure you didn't destroy any evidence that might prove your theory correct? And, by the way, essentially change history as we know it? Now listen, what do I know, right? I'm just a podcaster. But if it were up to me, and I had something here whose authenticity could change the entire telling of Western history, I think I would make my first examination involve a bit more than a tow truck and a pair of rain boots. But it's early days here, so let's have some patience with what they're doing and see what comes out of all this. My problem here is we went through an episode today with no more examination of the cone boulders of the cross and only one episode left. I feel like I'm going to be disappointed here, but all right. It's time to hear from one of my kind of co-pilots here on this podcast, a guy we really couldn't live without. Here is Steve in Ohio, who writes, Dave, hey there. Hope the job, the family, the gigging are all doing well as the summer approaches. Headed to Maine? You can knock out some FIPS research, as well as find volunteers from some DNA tests to see if Alex Lagina needs to explore his secret lineage. Love that from another listener. Steve is referring to an email from last week, I think it was last week, where another listener said that Alex Lagina looked suspiciously like William Phipps. And believe it or not, Steve, where Phipps lived in Maine is right by where I go each and every year. Maybe I'll poke around a bit and see if I can't find any symbols on the walls relating to Oak Island. Who knows, right? Anyway, Steve continues. We're all pretty hard, sometimes rightfully so, on the editors and showrunners. So I'd be really interested if the viewers and the listeners here were polled. Would they rather A, see a discovered object that turns out to be nothing, or B, not see or hear anything about it at all? So just a sampling, the Spanish piece of eight, which may or may not have been planted there, the swagger stick tip that turned out to be 20th century lipstick cover, the Roman pilum, which was likely a cribbing spike, the decorative women's ring, which an expert dated to the 1700s and it was found to be from the 1950s, the Roman sword that was found at the bottom of Mahone Bay and was determined to be an 18th or 19th century replica. Some folks have even pointed out that the red, white, and blue Venetian beads found on Lot 5 this year can be bought by the bag today on Etsy. You can also throw into the mix Zena Halpern's map, which many believe to be a rushed, poor copy of an older map. The Mi'kmaq flag, which most likely does not represent, even inverted, the Templar cross. The 90-foot stone, which has never been seen in the modern era, and yet probably inaccurate translation, is continuously leveraged as if it were fact. And finally, the bizarre mix of coins, Roman, British, French, Spanish, Chinese, perhaps Turkish, that are found scattered across the island, especially on Lot 5. On and on. Personally, while others may not, I do prefer that they share these things, even if they're debunked. It shows that the researchers are human, sometimes making excited conclusions and claims they later find to be lacking. I wouldn't want the entire show to be filled with this. They need to find something at some point, and even if it's an answer and not a treasure. Someone just needs to mind the shop and make sure the showrunners aren't just trying to fill 24 episodes with fluff, filler, and unlikely claims. I'm out of crown, so it's Woodford time, Steve. Steve, that sounds delicious. You know, my go-to in that situation would probably be something more like Tullamore Dew. Or maybe it was, if I'm feeling like a big shot, maybe a 16-year-old Lagavulin would hit the spot. But Woodford is very, very good alternative for sure. Anyway. Steve, as far as the rest of your email is concerned, and I get easily distracted by whiskey, I think my answer would not be either of your two choices, A, see the discovered object that turns out to be nothing, or B, not see or hear anything about it. I think I would take a third choice. I think my answer would be that I don't mind them finding these things and showing it to us and then going through the process of debunking them. But then I want to see by the experts and by the team that they were actually debunked. The problem is we almost never get to see the debunking. I've said this for years. If they actually debunk the finds that need debunking, and I've said that word a lot here, and tell us that, if they tell us that this is actually not authentic, at least in my mind, that adds a lot of credibility to the stuff they actually can't disprove. Instead, what we have is people start to question whether or not what they're seeing can really be trusted because, you know, nothing is ever debunked for us. And that's not a good position for a show of this kind to be in. I think, actually, they've gotten better with this part of this thing over the years, don't you? I mean, certainly over the last couple of years, there was a time there where a couple of seasons ago where they found an exciting, potentially ancient whatever, Akshu or crib spike, like every week with almost no follow-up on any of them other than a blacksmith looking at them. Thankfully, they've scaled, you know, what some people called the mundane finds back a lot this season. Thanks again, Steve. That's a great topic and one maybe we can examine a bit more in the off-season. Let's finish up with an email from Tom in Vancouver who writes, Hi, Dave. I'm a longtime listener, and your podcast is the best. Thank you, sir. This is my second time writing to you. As the season is winding down, I'm starting to feel frustrated about the lack of progress in the search effort. It got me to think about why they continue to advertise in the intro that each show that according to legend, another searcher must die before the treasure is revealed. This seems to contradict Marty and Rick's belief that we should follow the science. Okay, I'm just going to pause here for a little bit. Because in the live chat, actually, during this, the same Steve we just spoke with or answered the email from said something similar. He said, quote, okay, what is the origin of seven must die? A little bit of me dies every time they say it. Maybe that's what they mean. Well said, Steve. And we've discussed this before, but for some reason, this isn't the only two times this has come up recently. So I think it's time to kind of go back and just tell you this again. As far as I can find, and I did a lot of digging around on this, but as far as I can find, and as far as some other very well-known Oak Island historians, researchers, authors can find, this legend was simply made up by the producers. There's little to no evidence suggesting anyone who ever worked on the island or lived on the island or looked for the treasure ever believed in such a curse. Of course, there is a long and storied history of the paranormal on Oak Island. We've seen many shows about that. But this legend, this thing about the seven must die, has never been part of that either. Now, perhaps there is something, some kind of small bit rooted in history that we could say inspired this legend, but that's really the best we can say. All right, Tom continues. However, the last few episodes depicting star alignments, Templar engravings, and Viking travels to the Holy Land appear to be little more of, quote, hope and pray by following the latest breadcrumbs, and I'm questioning the science of this research. What is the prevailing hypothesis that we're trying to prove? At work, we would call this scope creep and rein in the budget. Finally, I have a reflection on the cast. The additions of the archaeologists and Emma scanning the various finds has been excellent, and your comments about the bulldozer bashing clay pots in the swamp made me howl with laughter. I'm not giving up on the research, but I'm just wondering when the dancing bear will show up to let us know the circus is almost over. Warm regards from Vancouver, Canada, Tom. Tom, these are all great questions. I think the bulk of your email we're going to address more towards the end of the episode review that we're about to do, so stay tuned for that. But I will say this. I think we have to be aware of the influence of the show producers. They have decided that the Templar angle is what drives ratings for the show. Whether they're right or wrong, I have no clue. And you know who else probably doesn't have a clue? Marty and Rick, right? This isn't their patch of grass, but it's pretty clear that's what they've concluded. And thus, I think we are getting what we can call a separation between what the team thinks of their research and what they're doing and what the producers want the viewers to focus on. As we saw last week in the Drilling Down episode, which we discussed in the last podcast, so go back and have a listen, the Laginas are, at best, willing to admit that the Templars are a suspect, maybe something of a small possibility. But by no means, it seems, they feel that the Templars are, you know, the probable culprits or even what they think is the most likely scenario. But they don't control the content of what goes on the show. So thus we get this separation, I think, that we're seeing now. The History Channel has made countless shows about the Knights Templar. And don't forget the show Vikings, which could possibly be the most popular show the channel has ever produced. So you see where we're going here, right? Now, the only effect that I actually see this stuff having on the team's work on Oak Island are these European trips. But like I said, I'm going to talk about that more, why I don't have a problem with that later in the podcast. So thank you very much, Tom. Great email, my friend. Okay, folks, that's all for the emails today. Don't forget, if you have any questions or comments, send them along to digginoakisland@gmail.com. All right, it's time now to discuss Season 11, Episode 24 of The Curse of Oak Island called Hairy Situation. All Elizabeth said in the live chat was cringe. Says it all, my friend. The pun writers are finishing up this season strong with some of their worst or best, depending on how you feel about bad puns and dad jokes. Like the last couple of episodes, most of this one also takes place in Europe. But we do have a bit to discuss from back in Canada, so let's start there. pretty much nothing to say here about the money pit. The episode starts with, as similar episodes do, it's sort of a formula now, with Marty checking in over there, but we don't get to see any actual work being done. There is a funny but kind of interesting little piece of narration that says something about the, quote, increasingly harsh weather. And then later, 2 weeks to go before winter sets in, which is hilarious because as he's saying this, what we're seeing are images of guys mostly in short sleeves on a beautiful sunny day. You know, it's a strange bit of editing there, but that's all really. And that's all for the money pit, really. And so let's talk about Lot 5. The first scene we see regarding anything with Lot 5 is in the lab with an analysis of some of the clay soil samples taken from the area, these foundation features, and comparing them with similar samples from the money pit. These two samples are apparently, according to Emma, pretty close chemically, and they match up pretty well. And the guys start talking about how significant this could be, somehow suggesting that this means that the people who built these structures on Lot 5, I guess they're saying also must have dug the money pit, but I'm confused. What are we actually saying here? I mean, Claude on the Patreon said, quote, how different is dirt from dirt? And then Paul on the Patreon also said, quote, you see, the clay on an island is similar all over the island. Brilliant. Search over. I mean, there's just a drop of snark there, Paul, but I can't help but agree with you. I can't understand why this is significant. There was clay in the swamp, too. How come we didn't test that? How much clay do they need to find before they conclude that it might just be part of the island's soil makeup? Folks, am I misunderstanding this? There's a lot of people out there, a lot of listeners with a bit of expertise. Let me know. Give us a drop me an email, diggingoakisland@gmail.com, and tell me what this could mean, because I'm out on this one. I have no idea why this is significant at all. Later in the episode, Jack Begley heads to Lot 5 to meet with Helen Sheldon and Fiona Steele. He starts to help by sifting through the dirt, the spoils in this project. And one of the archaeologists finds a rounded piece of lead, which they think might be one of those weights they would used to use for weighing currency and such. Not much to say about this, because that's all we really get is the find and some shots. And we don't really get an analysis. So maybe we'll learn more next week. I have no idea. But the last spot we want to talk about on Oak Island is Nolan's Cross. Those of you who were, you know, watching last week will remember that they pulled out from underneath one of these stones, Cone E, from the ground. They found this interesting looking rock, which is actually clay, and it had a hair in it. So Charles Barkhouse and Jack Begley go to St. Mary's University to meet with our old friends, Dr. Krista Brousseau and Dr. Sean Yang, to have them examine it more under a more powerful microscope. The doctors say that the hair is actually two hairs and that they are not human, but that's all they can say. For some reason, Charles Barkhouse then calls this a game changer for the island, but with so little information, I can't explain exactly what he meant by that. Hopefully we find out more on this little sample next week, which, by the way, is the finale, as I mentioned before. So if we don't hear about it next week, we can kind of put this thing into the category of lost finds, of which there are so many finds that turn out to be, I assume, just not very interesting. So they just decide never to discuss it again and leave hanging out there the possibility of something significant. Finally, it's time to head across the pond to Denmark for our final look at this year's European trip. Now, I'm going to butcher these Scandinavian words, so just bear with me. A couple of them I'm not even going to try to pronounce. Don't laugh too hard. The team is in Roskilde to visit the Viking Ship Museum. They are looking at old ships and asking questions like, could this vessel make it to Oak Island? I found this entire scene, I'll be honest with you, a little bit strange, if I'm honest, because if there's one thing we do know about the Vikings, it is that they indeed made it to Canada. That's not really in dispute anymore, certainly not from archaeologists. So I'm not sure what the need for this scene or this part of this trip actually was. I could have saved them a lot of time by simply answering this question for them. We didn't need a trip to a museum to learn that the Vikings were capable of sailing across the ocean. We've known that for a long, long time. Anyway, Peter Fredetti and Corian Maul, after this scene at the museum here are done, bid farewell to the team, and the rest of the guys head to Iceland to visit something called the Magnuson Institute in Reykjavik. I can say Reykjavik. There they meet with a professor whose name I absolutely will not attempt to pronounce. Emiliano Sacchetti is there with them, and he tells us that the professor has an old Icelandic manuscript that shows how astronomy made it to Iceland. Now, I know that sounds strange, but that's pretty much what I got out of this. Again, these last scenes here in Europe are all a bit hard to follow for me. I'm not really sure what the purpose was for what they're doing here and why we're having this conversation. You'll see what I mean. Sacchetti says that there is a mention in this old book of a star named Arcturus, which apparently was part of Professor Gaspani's Nolan Cross Alignment Theory. I'm not sure why that is such a big deal. I mean, there are stars in the sky. Why is it weird that they would also see the stars in Iceland? Anyway, inside of this book, Doug points out symbols that look vaguely like symbols found on things in Oak Island. But, you know, we went over this last week. I'm not sure why they got so excited about this, because these symbols can also be found on your iPhone. Rick got very excited about this, but who knows? This could all just be coming down to editing. I have no idea. So, the next scene we see, which is, I think, the second to last scene. Yeah, but the next scene we see here is the team going to the National Museum of Iceland to meet with the museum curator named Arman Gudmundsson. I think I got that. They are there to see Roman coins found here in Iceland, which look something like the Roman coins found on Oak Island. Again, I'm going to sound like a broken record here, but I don't understand what this is all about. Are we trying to say, first of all, there's Roman coins all over the Western world, found everywhere, but what are we getting at here? What is the theory? What are we trying to say? Are we trying to say that the Vikings brought Roman coins to Oak Island? Or maybe when the Templars met the Vikings to get their secret navigational charts to Mahone Bay, they sold them some of their holy relics and the Vikings paid for it in Roman currency, which the Knights then dropped on Oak Island. I mean, I can't even follow. It's all very confusing to me. I can't even follow what we're trying to say with some of these things we're looking at here in this one, which is unusual for this trip because the rest of the trip has been really kind of fun. Finally, the team heads to the southern side of Iceland to see some really cool old man-made caves there. On the wall, there is a carved cross that looks like the lead cross, which one of the guys refers to as Drayton's Cross. I really like that name. The team then heads back to Nova Scotia for a war room meeting where they kind of recap the whole trip for Marty and the rest of the team who stayed behind. Now, I know I sound snarky, maybe even a bit cynical about this trip today, but I really love this stuff, and let me tell you why. And this harkens back to Tom's earlier email in the podcast asking, again, what are we trying to prove here? Now, I've said that a couple times about some of these scenes, but I think he's talking a little more overarching about the trip itself and this whole sort of European Viking thing. Honestly, I don't think that we're going to find anything definitive in the way of proof that the Templars came to Oak Island in some cave in Europe or some old book or in a recreation of a Viking ship. But this theory of the Knights Templar digging on Oak Island and bringing the treasure to Oak Island is an old one and a very exciting one. And it's one that's been researched for years and years and being researched by some incredibly smart people and people that we call friends here, right? So what I love is the fact that we're getting to see basically that research done right in front of us. And it's fascinating to me and it's worth our time. It may never be that we can find what we're looking for here with regards to Oak Island, but we are seeing evidence of this Templar flight. This, you know, perhaps, you know, following, maybe even now, guys like Corey and Maul and the team here are following the route that the Templars took out of Europe, essentially an underground route to avoid persecution and arrest, to get out of Europe to some place of safety, whether that includes a treasure and burying it and hiding it later on, who knows? But we're seeing this theory kind of come to fruition here, and a lot of new evidence that they were in places that maybe we didn't think they should have been, and we didn't know that they ever were. To me, that alone is worth the price of admission. And if we follow that here and get evidence towards that, even if that never turns out to be anything Oak Island related, I love it. I want to see it. Despite the episode, which was admittedly a bit confusing, you know, I thought the trip in whole was fantastic and made for great television. And some of it, perhaps the best I've ever seen on the subject of a possible Templar flight. Again, that might be disappointing to those of you who are only here for Oak Island stuff, but I'm in this for more than just treasure. I'm not in it for treasure at all. I'm in it for, like I said, the truth behind the Oak Island mystery. But if we can find truth behind another mystery, what did the Templars do after their persecution? Did they flee? Where did they go? How did they get there? I'm all in. That's going to do it for this episode of the Diggin' Oak Island podcast. Don't forget, you can really help out the show by becoming a patron. If you think the show's worth $5 a month to you, then head on over to patreon.com/diggin' oak island to learn more. And if you prefer, you can also make a one-time donation to the podcast via Venmo. Just use the username @DaveMcBrideMusic. Also, if you'd like to help out the podcast in another way, then you can do so by giving us a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or anywhere you get your shows. A big thanks to everyone who has left us a 5-star rating already. I really, really do appreciate it. I appreciate the kind words and, of course, you guys taking the time to do that for us. Don't forget, you can follow the show on Facebook. Just put @DigginOak Island into your search bar. And if you have any questions or comments that you want to send to me, you can send that via email, digginoakisland@gmail.com. Just keep in mind, if you do send me an email, I may just answer it here on the podcast. So if you don't want that message read to everybody, please make a note of that. Well, folks, it is crown time and almost the end of this season. So until we speak again, I'm Dave McBride. Thank you for listening to Diggin' Oak Island.